Welcome to the Thanksgiving Day edition of Sports Talk 870. We wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. We're going to talk Mid-Michigan area basketball with coaches Carlton Valentine of Lansing Sexton and Steve Fenimore of East Lansing. Please do not call in. Today's program has been pre-recorded. Good afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome to our Thanksgiving Day program.
Hey, Earl. Hey, thanks for having us.
Hey, glad to have you both with us. And I want to start out with you, Carlton. Your team will be defending, of course, your state championship from last year. What will be the difference for you from last year's team and this year's team?
Well, I think the first thing is probably the most obvious is that we'll be the team that will be hunted. And so you have to change the whole mentality of how you approach things. I think your daily approach has to be different. I think your goal setting has to be different. I think the way you approach just when you walk in the building, it's going to have to be different. If not, you're going to be facing some things that you probably shouldn't have to face. So it's going to be a huge challenge. But we're going to just go one day at a time, one practice at a time, one game at a time, and try to improve as we go along.
That's the next thing I was going to ask you. How do you combat the players, you know, getting a little complacent and, you know, you're going to get everybody's best effort coming at you because you're the state champions. How do you get your players to figure that out, to notice that they're going to come out and give even an absolute better effort than what they gave last year?
Cut them off from the world. You know, it's really tough when everybody telling you, you know, how good you are. You know, you got to listen to parents, you listen to your friends, you listen to people telling you how good you are. And I think that's going to start from day one. From day one, you got to go in with a different perspective. You got to make sure the guys don't think they're better than they are. You got to remember how you got to where you got to. You know, you got to stay humble, you got to stay hungry, and you got to stay focused. And the one thing is I'll keep reiterating that all year to the guys is that if you're not hungry and you're not humble, you won't get to where you got before. So it's going to be it'll be a challenge all year, but, you know, it's very, very tough when everybody's telling you how good you are.
And, Steve, how good and different will your team be this year?
Well, Earl, last year, our first season there, you know, we tied for the conference championship with Okemos, and no one expected that. I think they picked us third or fourth for the conference. We lost some really strong seniors from last year's team. Matter of fact, we lost a lot of our toughness, and I'm not afraid to say that in front of Carlton because, you know, once you see us play, you'll definitely see we lost guys like Devlin Bell and Tyler Tucker, who were really tough for us. The good thing, though, a lot of our players who played a lot of minutes last year were underclassmen, so they've learned what we expect, and, you know, things are going to be tough because now, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, Carlton's team has joined our conference, which only makes it now the best conference in the state of Michigan. You know, last year I thought we were up there, but having them in there just makes it a lot stronger. And like Carlton said, every single day we got to bring it.
Well, Carlton, why don't you give your take on the conference this year and then Steve give your take.
Unbelievable conference. And Steve is right on. And I'll start with his team, who's a really, really good team. Steve runs a great dribble drive offense, and his guys penetrate kick, and they make things really tough on defenses. You know, you can't over-pursue. You're going to have to contain those guys. East Lansing will be a very, very good team, as well as Okemos with Coach Dan Stoltz. You know, they have Chris Hess and Docs who signed with Butler. And then Dan Stoltz is very, very good with running his system and getting his role players to do what they need to do. Such a good veteran coach in Dan Stoltz. And then you have Lansing Eastern with Coach Rod Watts, who you know, is always good with his team, with Cha-Cha Tucker, Brian Moore, and those guys right there. They'll be right there. So there you have it. The CAC Blue will be, if not the best conference in Michigan, one of the best conferences in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to follow that up. He hit the nail on the head with those four teams, with our four teams. You know, two teams, too, that are going to be very tough to play are Jackson and Holt. You know, Holt had a lot of young players last year, Earl, and Jackson, you know, Ramsey Nichols, who I think is one of the best coaches in the state, does a good job. You know, he went into a tough situation down there a couple of seasons ago. He had his everyday problems that we have, you know, with the parents, with the player personalities and stuff like that. So you're looking at six teams that can, you know, challenge for the top position. And we all know Sexton's going to be the favorite, and we may all be fighting for second place. But that's six strong teams there that can, you know, on any given night, it's going to be a tough game.
What's your take, Steve, on the mid-Michigan area basketball season in general for the overall season?
I think it's great. You know, I listen to some pundits out there. They talk about the talent is down. You know, Terry Foster wrote an article, you know, in the summertime about the talent in Michigan being down. And I actually wrote him an email, but I never heard back from him. And I thought he was wrong on that. You know, over the years, we might have been spoiled with some great players. But, you know, with Carlton being here in the studio, I'd put Denzel up against any of those kids anytime. You know, Docs is another great player that Carlton talked about. He's going to Butler. You know, Mid-Michigan has been great to Oakland University over the last 7 or 8 years. You know, there's so many players from this area, from Derek Nelson, Jonathan Jones, Eric Hangis, Drew Valentine, that have gone there. So just because teams like Michigan State and North Carolina and Kentucky are not getting these players, it doesn't mean the talent's down.
Absolutely.
Now Carlton, how many teams will you face outside of the mid-Michigan area in your pre-9 conference schedule?
Man. Oh, man. Yes. Don't get me scared at all. I got to go see those games.
Oh, man. We're going to have a very, very tough preseason schedule. I'll start off with the top of the top. We're going to see Romulus. And they're rated number 32 in the ESPN Fab 50. And so we're going to see them.
Hey, wait a minute, but wait, see, where are you guys rated? Let's not forget that.
Well, we're gonna see Romulus. We're also gonna see a good Pershing team, Detroit Pershing Doughboys, who are good every year. We're also gonna see the back-to-back state championship Kalamazoo Central, the Maroons. So the Maroon Giants. We're gonna see those guys. So we have a tough schedule ahead of us, and. You know, we welcome the tough schedule. You know, I tell players, you know, I played one of the toughest high schools in the country at DeMatha High in Washington, D.C. And the one thing that Coach Wooten, my coach, always told us is that you have to face the tough competition. If you think you're good, then you play other teams that are good. So I guess we're going to see where we're at. We're also going to play Howell, who's pretty good. They got a couple guys. Maloshin Brandon, who played on my son Denzel's AAU team, 6'7" guy and a 6'9" guy. So we're loaded up. If we take a licking, we'll just keep on ticking.
What do you look for on your team, too?
Well, Earl, that's a great point because when we were younger, and you guys could probably attest to this, you got on your bike and you went to a park and you looked for the best competition. If guys came to your park, you know, you check them out. You, as a player, as a great player, as a serious player, you want to play against the best competition. So with Sexton playing all those schools, you know Carlton's guys are up for that challenge. You know, you could play those small schools and beat them. Well, hey, you know what? Maybe some of them can beat you, but the kids want the best competition. And Earl, a couple of teams that we're playing this year, who I think gets overlooked a lot, is we're playing Lansing Catholic with Stevie Repichowski. And we're playing Waverly, and Craig Fields always does a good job with his team. We're playing those two non-conference foes, so you want to play the best teams. Your players want to play against the best players.
And Steve, I remember last year when we were talking after one game, and you told me basically you give everybody the green light.
Yeah, they do. Hey, come on, man. But see, Carlton came to a couple of games, so I have no secrets. You know, I think Dan Stoles told me that he watched 10 of our games this year or last year because they were on local cable, and we have no secrets. There are no secrets in basketball.
That's true.
Everyone on our team has the green light to shoot because we work on it every day. And I give those kids confidence to shoot the ball. And there are some coaches who email me and say, well, coach, you know, I see a kid in there taking these questionable shots. But I say to them, I say, well, you don't see us in practice every day. We're shooting those shots and we're encouraging. No one makes every shot in a game, so you're going to have some missed shots. So, yeah, we do give everyone the green light.
Okay, and that is a little bit different. A lot of coaches don't do that. You know, a lot of coaches run set plays and such, and then they have a little bit now. Carlton, your son is committed to Michigan State, and have you prepared him for what he's going to face this year? Many kids will when they're facing Denzel. They'll be saying that they should have been offered a scholarship from state and will be looking to show up Denzel in their game. So how will that make Denzel a better player, and have you prepared him for that? For those kind of tactics.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time. And we had that talk in the kitchen last night. We were talking about how to match energy, because it's all about energy. If you don't match in someone's energy, then they're gonna get the best of you. And he knows. You know, we talk about being mentally prepared, being physically prepared. And then, scholarships don't fall out the sky. You know what I mean? We have guys, three guys that play Division I basketball. Now people think they're falling out the sky. What they have no idea is how much energy, effort, and work that Denzel has put into becoming the player that he's become. I mean, the guy basically lives in the gym. He trains three times a week with his trainer. He takes care of his academics, he's a 3-7 student. I mean, he's done a lot of things to prepare himself for playing at Michigan State and putting himself in position to receive, a Division I scholarship from a Big Ten university. So as far as guys coming at him, we saw it all summer. We saw guys coming at him, following him hard, pushing him, hitting him, and he didn't match the energy. And, and quite frankly, I was a little bit upset with that. And how, he didn't respond to it, but he said, what else am I supposed to do? And, we've had that talk, and he's going to prepare, and he'll be ready for when those kind of things happen.
Now, Steve, I know you've said some of your players have been offered scholarships, and Carlton, as well as some of the other players on your team, have been offered scholarships. What do you tell them going into this year, about their chance of getting a scholarship?
I think, Earl, all across the board, and maybe some people will cringe at this, but it's important, like Carlton said, they don't fall out of the sky. But you can't worry about things like that. The main thing is, if someone wants you, if you get a letter from a Division II, a letter from a Division III, or a small D1, you have to reach out to that school and get back to them and nurture that friendship. Everyone can't play for Michigan State. Everyone can't play for North Carolina. So you got to go somewhere where you're wanted. We got a few players that get a lot of letters from Division II schools, some small Division I's. Carlton and I can do only so much for a kid and their parent and their family when it comes to that kind of situation. We can't get on the phone and call every single school, in the MAC conference, in the Big Ten, and say, hey, we got a kid, you should come look at these kids. A lot of these college coaches, they're paid to do this, to evaluate. If they don't see that kid fitting in with their system, the kid may not be the kid's not good enough, but they may just not fit into that system. And to talk about Denzel going to Michigan State, I think they got a fantastic player, because he's not only a good basketball player, he's a good person. And that's another thing a lot of people seem to lose sight of. Just because you can put the ball in a basket, it doesn't mean you're automatically going to get a scholarship. College coaches these days, and Carlton knows, he's been around for a long time, they look at your character. They look at your body language on the floor. They look how you are on the bench. So it's not all about, scoring 25 points a game.
Yes. And so what I'm going to ask both of you now, when you have kids who are a possibility for a scholarship, how do you advise a kid who wants to play at a higher level? They may just got all D2 offers, or maybe, like you say, lower Division I offers. But, in their mind and in their heart, they believe that they can play at a higher level. Yeah. How do you advise them?
We were talking about this morning, right?
Yeah. Here's the thing, man. There's nothing wrong with playing Division II or Division III, or let's say even junior college Division I, Division II. You have to go where they want you. You have to go where it's going to be the best fit. When I advise kids about college basketball, I give them a lot of different things. But the first thing I talk about is what Steve talks about. Make sure that you're a good person. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to recruit someone who's not that of high quality character. The second thing I talk about is you got to be a good student. You have to make sure that yourself, make sure that you're eligible, and you got to know what the eligibility standards are through the NCAA clearinghouse. The third thing is being a good player. They wouldn't come watch you if you weren't a good player. They wouldn't come watch you. So being a good person, being a good student, and then being a good player, and then they'll come and find you. Everybody's not, like Steve said, everybody can't play Division I basketball. Everybody can't play Big Ten basketball. When was the last time Duke, Kentucky, or Kansas came and got a player from Lansing, Michigan? Okay, I can't remember when the last time Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, came and got a player from Lansing, Michigan. So I said, you got to get in where you fit in. You know, you find the perfect fit for you, and then go from there. You know, there's a lot of different things you have to do, and there's a lot of different options out there for kids to play.
Okay, now, I think you might have heard this take when I was you had a kid who was going originally to Eastern Michigan and switched to Iowa, and I said on the air basically that I thought he should have stayed at Eastern Michigan because he's going to a place where he knows he could play, and, of course, going to Iowa, people don't know him out there. He may get a chance to play. He may not get a chance to play. He could get lost in the shuffle. How do you advise a kid like that who maybe should have gone – it's a Division I school and a pretty good one, but he wants to go out of state and try to play Big Ten basketball.
Yeah, that was a very, very tough decision for Anthony at that time. And you know, he was committed to play at Eastern Michigan. And I was of the same mind as you, Earl. Once you make a commitment, you follow through, you stay with your commitment. But in his heart and in his soul, he had worked really hard. When you really look at the whole situation, the kid did not have one Division I, did not have one Division II offer until July. Okay, so now July comes, and all of a sudden he gets these offers from Division IIs, and then he got an offer from Eastern Michigan. The coaching staff did a great job recruiting him. They're all over him. It was like the first girl you kiss. Nah, I'm here. But as the recruiting process went along, I mean, you know, there were other schools involved. He said, "Whoa, I rushed into it." Mm-hmm. And so he said, you know, in my heart, in my soul, I'm going to try to play at the highest level. I said, there's a chance that you may not play. You may not play. Mm-hmm. You were not their first choice. You were not their first option. He said, I'm aware of a coach. You know, hey, this is my dream. You know, I have an opportunity. I'm going to take it. I said, well, when you do this, you make sure that you let Eastern Michigan know that you really loved and you cared about the way they treated you, the way they treated your family, because we still have to have a relationship with that school and with those coaches once you make that decision. And I thought he handled it the best way he could, and he is where he is now.
Okay. Steve, what about you? I mean, how do you handle players in that situation? What do you tell them, about going to the bigger school and maybe going to a smaller school where you know they're going to play for sure?
And I'll tell you, Earl, I didn't have a problem with what Anthony did. I really didn't. I love Rob Murphy at Eastern Michigan, Kevin Mondro. Those guys are good guys, Benny White. But we talked about earlier, a kid wants to play against the best competition. Mm-hmm. Now, the MAC is a great conference. We all know that. All right, but obviously it's not the Big Ten. Fran McCaffrey, the head coach at Iowa, okay, I've coached against him in the MAC conference back east. He's a great coach. He's coached at Notre Dame. He was Digger Phelps' assistant. Fran McCaffrey will get the best out of you, okay? And they liked him a lot. And what's real important is AAU is so, so valuable to a kid in the summertime. And Carlton just hit the nail on the head. Kids have to play AAU basketball. I'm for it. You know, I've been for it for the last 10, 15 years. I coached AAU in New York. I saw what it could do for kids. One example I will give you is Jamel Tinsley, the NBA guard. Okay, he played in the NBA for about 8 or 9 years, played at Iowa State. He never played one high school basketball game in his career. He was in 3 different schools, was never eligible, but he played AAU basketball. So that is so important. And that's where a junior college saw Jamel, and then Iowa State saw him. So if you're a parent, if you're a kid, get on a team, make sure it works for you, make sure it's a good fit, and like we said, you know, you got to go where you feel most comfortable.
Well, let me ask you both. Do you think kids play too much basketball? They're almost playing year-round with AAU ball now.
Well, yes and no. I would say yes because, you know, sometimes when you get to the AAU tournaments, you got kids playing 3, 4, and maybe 5 games a day. See, that's too much. Yeah. You know, as a matter of fact, like this summer when Denzel was playing, I made him skip a tournament because it's just too much of a grind back to back to back to back. Now, is it too much for that kid who doesn't have maybe an opportunity? I don't think so, especially during the July period when it's an open evaluation period. You need to be out there. You need to be out there playing because there's just so many coaches out there. I mean, that's their time to get out and watch. They can't get out during their season. They can't because they're so concerned with their season, with their team, with their players, their personnel, what's going on in their program. So during this July period, you can't get out there enough. I mean, if there's a tournament and you kids need to get out, probably shouldn't be saying it. We're high school guys, and a lot of high school guys don't like it. But I'm for it. Both of my sons have had the opportunity. A lot of my players have had the opportunity to play AU, and they're playing in college right now.
I think, Earl, if you have someone like Carlton who knows the lay of the land, knows the foundation, has been through it, him keeping Denzel out of a tournament was a great move, and that's what you got to do. You can't oversaturate yourself with all this. You can't be every single weekend being in a different city playing 3-4 games a day. I'd like to see these organizers of these tournaments cut down the games, but with that, you got to pay rental for the facility you're in, and you got to have a lot of teams. You got to make a lot of money. These teams across the country, they want to play a lot of games, most of them, you know. Mm-hmm. And with the kids, I'll give you another example. In Vegas, Thomas Jackson, okay, he was playing for the Mustangs, and Thad Mata was an assistant at Butler, now the head coach at Ohio State. He saw Thomas playing AAU basketball. Temple saw him playing AAU basketball. Clemson saw him playing AAU basketball. And Carlton coached Thomas. That helped him immensely. There are a lot of great stories out there that no one talks about. Everyone talks about the cynical part of AAU basketball, but I've seen it both on both ends. And it's just like anything. It could be too much of it could be bad for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, both of you have to deal with parents, of course, a lot.
He can go first.
Ooh, he can go first.
Oh, man. Well,
And, of course, you know, the parents, in all honesty, they really aren't familiar with AAU basketball. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them aren't that familiar with high school basketball because I listen to all the complaints. I hear them as well as you do. So tell us about how you help deal with AAU basketball and also with high school basketball.
Well, you know, you got to find a fit. And mm-hmm. Steve kind of mentioned that earlier. You have to find a team where you're going to play. If you're going to play in an AAU team and you're not playing, then it's not a good fit for you. So I think with parents, the first thing you give them, you got to let them know what's going on. You know, there's 3 months of AAU basketball. You play April, May, and then you play July. April and May, you're playing and you're playing a lot of tournaments. You want to get warmed up, and then people can get the buzz about you or your specific team. And then July is the open period where they come and watch you play. What I've advised parents to do is you got to let your kids play. You got to let them get on a good team, and then the things will happen the way they're supposed to happen. I always say you can't make things happen. Things will happen the way they're supposed to happen, not the way you want them to happen. This is not a microwave thing where you can put a guy in, ding, and it comes out. Okay, now he's played AAU, you're going to get a scholarship. It just doesn't happen that way. And I'll use my guy, Anthony Clemens, as a perfect example. Here's a guy who did not have not one scholarship offer, okay? We won a state championship. Now, listen, we won a state championship. He's my starting point guard. And he didn't have a D2 offer. Now, there's nothing wrong with D2, D3, but he didn't have a junior college offer, okay? So now he goes out and has a great AAU season in April and May, and that set him up for July. It's just unbelievable. He made one play out there where he jumped over two guys and dunked the ball, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, my phone's blowing up. I mean, just no. It's seriously off the hook. It was just unbelievable. So, you know, find a good team. You find a good coach. Find somebody that's going to coach your kids and teach them a little bit, and then put them in a good situation where they're going to have some success.
I think you got to keep it in perspective as a parent. You know, you can't live your life vicariously through your son or your daughter. You got to be honest in the evaluation and what kind of player they are. You know, you really, really got to be honest in this. And it's unfortunate, Carlton and Earl, that a lot of parents are not honest in their child's ability. You know, I'll give you an example. My daughter, she's 12 years old, and she's growing to love the game. And I don't push her. I've seen the evil side of that. I've seen daughters go against their fathers when they become teenagers and young adults. And I talked to fathers about it. I said, I wish I had a better relationship with my daughter when we were in high school. I pushed her every day to play ball, and she wound up hating me, you know, and kicking the basketball and walking out of the gym. Mm-hmm. So you got to let it happen. You got to teach your kid, you know, there's more to basketball than just scoring the ball and being the best player on a team, getting your picture and your name in the Lansing State Journal. You know, grab some rebounds, play some defense, be a good teammate, you know. Like Carlton said, be a good student. And like you said, the microwave thing, it's everybody wants instant, you know, success right away, and it's not going to happen. And as for you know, AAU tournaments, parents at these tournaments and stuff, and you know, they see all these coaches. They see Roy Williams over here and Tom Izzo over here, and they get excited, you know. And like you said, you know, Anthony throws a couple of dunks down, coaches start calling him. At these AAU venues, you got a ton of coaches. At a high school game, you're going to have all the people in the community watching. You never know. Someone like from, say, Iowa, Fran McCaffrey can have a friend living in Michigan. He could say, hey, you know, Earl, go to that Sexton East Lansing game tonight. Take a look at if there's anybody there you think we should be recruiting. You never know who's watching. Mm-hmm. So like Carlton said, they'll find you if you can play.
And that is the key. And unfortunately with parents, as you know, and I know I've known, when you talk with them during the season, so many of them think, like you said, Steve, their kids should be scoring and be putting the ball in the hole. That's the bottom line with all the parents. They think their kid is not getting enough shots. How do you deal with that and trying to tell these parents, hey, you know, you're trying to teach a team game. You're trying to teach them to play defense, trying to teach them to share the ball. But everybody seems to want their kid to be the number one option.
Right, right. Yeah, we had a parent stand behind my bench yelling, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it. Well, we don't have a play called shoot it. I don't have a play called shoot it, shoot it, shoot it. You know, we run sets, we run. It starts with the parent meeting, you know, at the beginning of the year. You know, I have a mandatory parent meeting. And what I try to do with the parent meeting is explain, you know, what my philosophy is and how I teach basketball and being a part of a team and being a part of a program. And, you know, at that point, I lay everything out. I don't have a middle-of-the-year parent meeting or the end-of-the-year parent meeting. I'm going to have one. And at that time, I'm going to let you know, how we're going to do things. We're going to treat your son fair. We're going to treat him with respect. And we're going to work him hard. We're going to hold him accountable. And, you know, that's pretty much all you can ask from your high school coach. You know, it's a team game. I don't know who's going to be my leading scorer. I don't know who's going to be my leading rebounder. But I can guarantee you, you know, he's going to work hard in practice. And he's going to get the things that he needs to get better. You know, if he has aspirations of playing at the next level, that will happen. I'm not really concerned about who the leading scorer is, okay? Denzel Valentine is going to play at Michigan State. He averaged 12 points last year per game, okay? But he's dropping off 8 assists and getting 8 rebounds. Yep. You know, so it really, scoring doesn't matter. When you're playing a team game, it's about the team. It's not about, I always say, it's not about me, it's about we. Mm-hmm. We, you know, when you play in the me game and the I game, you don't get the results you want to get.
Okay. When I was at St. Peter's College in New Jersey, we had the leading scorer in the country on our team. He was 5'9", 5'10", point guard. He averaged like 23, 24 points a game. One year he averaged 26 a game. But he also was our leading assist guy. And a lot of people don't realize this, but Jimmer Fredette, you know, we saw him put up big numbers this year, but he also led BYU in assist. You know, so you got to have that well-rounded game like Denzel does. When they saw him play, they saw something in him that was special, and that's what you want to do. Last year, our team at East Lansing, we had seven players, Earl, who averaged between 8 points a game and 12 points a game. And so my message got across, we're going to share this ball whether you like it or not. And when the kids see the success and they see the final results, they really buy into it, Earl, because I don't know if you guys will agree with this. Kids today, Earl, they're not different than when Carlton and I were kids growing up. They're really not. Now, hear me out on this. It's the people that are around them and the people that were around us that are different, okay? Because I'm sure Carlton has his stories. I have my stories. All the players, Magic will give you his stories. We didn't have parents at the games yelling and screaming. We didn't have parents. You know, with this internet craze and these recruiting services, you know, the stakes have been raised. But, you know, back in the day, you know, if I did something wrong in school – and I went home and told my mother would hit me again. She'd go, yeah, you deserved it. You deserved it. Today, if you yell at a kid and they go home and tell their parent, you're getting a call, a text, or an email, and you may have to go up and have a meeting with someone.
That's right.
That's true. Yeah. Well, you're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR. I'm talking with Steve Fenimore, the high school coach at East Lansing, and Carlton Valentine, the high school coach at the Lansing Sexton. And we're talking this on this day, Thanksgiving Day, and please do not call in because today's program is pre-recorded, so please do not call in today's show. But we'll be back talking more sports talk right here on AM 870 WKAR. Now, Steve and Carlton, we've covered a lot of areas about high school sports and the players out there and what they should do when, you know, in trying to get a scholarship and what they should do as far as being a good teammate. That's very important. Unfortunately, as you know, so many kids, they have that desire to be the best player, or they're saying it's your responsibility to put them in the position like to be a top point guard, or to be the scoring power forward, or to be a center who's rebounding and getting the shots. Everybody wants to be the man, as we always say. What do you do to try to help your guys and help your teammates not to just be the man?
Number one, Earl, it's relationships. You got to build a relationship with your players. Last year when I took the job at East Lansing, we got in there, we started doing some four-man workouts. You know, we played by the rules. And I got to know players like Tracy Edmond, John McAdoo, Ahmad Newsom, Javon Haynes. You got to get to know those kids and have them understand that you're in their corner. And show them, hopefully, by your track record, where you've been in the past, and use some examples. Like, for instance, what I do sometimes is I'll cut out articles from newspapers about players who, you know, do things the right way. You know, we're always talking about, you know, play the right way. You know, Larry Brown made that statement. He got that from Red Holzman back in the day. You're like a teacher. You're like a history teacher with these basketball players. You got to explain to them the situation. And the parents, too. You got to have that meeting, like Carlton talked about. You got to lay it out. You got to be honest with people, Earl. And at the end of the day, you know, you did your best. You know, Carlton and I, we work really hard at our craft. There's other coaches around the way. You know, the whole coach, Matt Essel, he does a good job. Ramsey Nichols. We're working hard out there. The pay, we're not in it for the pay. Okay, Carl and I talked about that today. You know, I hear parents and fans yell at these youth coaches. I go to some games on Sundays, and they're yelling at these poor coaches. And the coaches are young. They're starting out, but they're not getting any money. So it's relationship building, Earl, is probably the key.
Okay. Well, let me take you guys back a little bit, because as you know, we all played pickup basketball back in the day. Carlton, you and I played, and even went down to a couple of joints and played a few times. And Steve, you and I played over at the gym. So what do you tell kids today about playing pickup ball, and what should they get out of their pickup basketball game, or what should they learn to help make them a better player?
Well, you know, there's two sides to that. I hate open gym. I hate open gym. I think, you know, from a coach's perspective, you know, kids learn bad habits. You know, they don't sprint up and down the floor. They don't guard or close out on a guy every time. They don't block out. They don't talk on defense. Those kind of things that a coach is looking for. But what you can gain, you can gain confidence when you play pickup basketball. Maybe work on some things that you can't work on during your regular school year. Like if you can't, you know, your coach says, well, hey, you can't shoot three-point shots. Well, when you're playing pickup game, this is your time to kind of work on your three-point shot. If your coach said, hey, I don't want you to handle the ball, you can't dribble. Well, in a pickup game, you can kind of work on that in a simulated game situation. So from that aspect, I think pickup basketball and playing on the playground is good. But, you know, I honestly, it's tough for me to watch my kids play open gym. I have to walk in and I walk out. So,
I think, Earl, we've lost the notion of being outside. Depending where you live, you know, it makes a big difference. You know, there are a lot of parks that are empty, a lot of schoolyards that are empty. And we played all day on Saturdays. After school, you went home, you got dressed, and you went to the park and played. Summertime, you were out there all the time. I think it's important. Carlton talked about the confidence, no doubt about it. I think it builds your toughness, too. It builds your courage. Remember, Earl, we used to play against guys. Well, I'd show up at our park, and the older guys would be on the court.
Oh, yeah.
And I would sit on the side and wait and hope and pray that someone would get hurt, and they would say, Red, let's go, get in here. And you'd get on that team, and you would watch. You would pass the ball every time you got it, and you watch guys move, and you'd have to guard somebody that was stronger than you, that was better than you. So I think you improve that way, too. The competition, like Carlton said, the confidence and the courage with three things. things that pickup ball kids gain from.
Okay. Well, let me get back to both of your teams. Now, when you play your non-conference games this season, what do you want the players to get out of your – and I want both of you to answer this. Okay. What do you want your players and your team to get out of their non-conference games?
Well, for me, it's all about, you know, working together as a unit. You know, how well will we blend? Because each year, it doesn't matter what your personnel is. It's a different group of kids. Mm-hmm. You can never rely mm-hmm. on what you did right. last year. Last year doesn't matter. So now you got a different group. You got to make sure the chemistry is good. You know, I want to make sure that we're executing in a half-court set, making sure that we're sharing the basketball, making sure we're working together on defense, we're talking, we're communicating. And then I'm looking at some things that don't really show up like that. I'm looking at, you know, how guys are caring about each other when they're on the bench, and, you know, are they getting together in the locker room? You know, we haven't had a problem with that in the past, but, you know, I look for a lot of things like that. And in those preseason games in the beginning, you know, even your scrimmage games, when you have your scrimmages the first 2 weeks of the upcoming season, those are pretty good indicators of what's going to happen during your year. So those are the kind of things I look for.
And, yeah, it's as simple as that. You look for kids who can handle those big, you know, conference games on Friday nights in front of a, you know, you're not going to simulate the same thing, but you want to see which of your personnel can handle certain situations. You know, you run a couple of plays, you see if they know the out-of-bounds play, you know, you put in a few plays, and you're in a game, in a non-conference game, you know, in early December. You want to see, does that kid know what he's doing? Then maybe you talk to them. And competition's important, too. During the week in practice, you guys are competing. You know, if you got a lot of depth, you got guys like last year, we had nine pretty solid players, 10 guys. And they were battling every day for playing time. So the non-conference games are probably a competition for playing time.
Okay. What about when you look at these all the non-conference games and everything and all the players are battling for playing time, and of course some aren't going to get that shot at playing time. What do you tell those kids who don't get a chance to play? Even though I know that's got to be tough. That's probably the toughest part of the job. You know, letting a kid know, yeah, you're good, but you're just not as better than those first 10 or 11 players.
Well, you know, that's very, very important. And you have to – the one thing I talk about in my parent meeting is that a playing group is 8 or 9 players. Okay, you got 12, 13 guys on your team. That's not a playing group. Yeah. A playing group is 8 players. I always say you have your 5 players on the floor, and then you got 3 players to sub each position, and you go to the 9th guy for foul trouble. So that's what I look at with the playing group. Now, when you are picking your team – And kind of what Steve said earlier, it's about relationships. You got to know what kind of kids you got. You got to know what kind of families are behind you. You got to kind of – and those got to be special people. They got to be special people that know their role. Not only do they know their role, they accept their role. And they're not going to be cancer on the bench. And then – because if a kid is cancer, the family is cancerous. And you know what I mean? No joke.
No, I like it.
You know, so those got to be special people. They got to know and understand, because in the meeting, they'll say, yeah. But you got to really know the kid, and you got to know the family. You got to – people have to know their role. I think, to me, the biggest thing, Steve, is role clarity. People have to know their role. You have to tell them up front. If you tell them up front, then they can't come back to you and say, well, you didn't tell me. Well, yes, I did. We said it in the parent meeting, and I tell you every day in practice, this is your role. If you can't handle it, then fine. You know what I mean? I understand. We're going to find somebody who can.
I think in tryouts, you know, 2 weeks ago when we had to cut kids, I think that's one of the hardest things, Earl, to tell a kid that you're not good enough to make this team. And when we did pick our team, you know, you got to explain to the 10th, 11th, and 12th man, listen, you may not play. You know, you may get in some blowouts, but are you willing to compete and practice every day? Are you going to go to class and do your work? Are you going to be a good student in the hallways? You know, am I going to get complaints about you? You want that last couple of kids to be good kids on that bench, you know. I think that was really big for us last year. I took 2 juniors last year. I cut a few seniors that were actually on the team the year before. And you want those last few spots to be good people. You know, Greg Popovich of the San Antonio Spurs, they do things the right way. I read a quote from him one time. He said, they asked him, why do you have so many European players on your team, international players? He said, you know what? Those guys come here, they're grateful for a job, and they're not jerks. I don't want to come to practice every day and have to coach jerks.
That's true. Well, mm-hmm. I know both of you guys, you go out to Michigan State games and you look at the Michigan State team. When you go to a college game, what do you both look for in the game? What are you both looking to see in the game?
Well, I look for a lot of different things. You know, quite honestly, I'm looking for a wrinkle.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
There's something I can take back and do with my guys. But, you know, I look and see, you know, I look for crisp execution. I want to see how guys are executing. I kind of watch the same things as I'm watching when I go to any game. You know, are guys talking on defense? And I'm looking at the coaching staff on, you know how's the coaching staff communicating on the bench? You know, where's everybody seated? You know, if you go to Michigan State games, you'll see that they got guys seated strategically. You know what I mean? They have three guys up front, and then Mike Garland sits down a little bit from there. So guys are seated strategically. And then I'm looking to see, you know, like the little things. You know, I'm watching when players come off the floor, you know, from the time they leave the floor till they sit down, till they go get their water. You know, are they going down the whole bench and they're giving fives and shaking hands and, you know, those kind of things. So, quite honestly, I'm looking for a wrinkle. And then I'm looking for what I look for at every basketball game, which is at every level, probably except the NBA level.
Okay.
Yeah, he's right. The wrinkle. You know, when I watch a game, I keep a pad next to me. If I go to a game and I see a play, I'll write it on the roster or the program, whatever I have in my hands, and people will look at me, and I'll be, if I see Michigan State run something I really like that I think our guys can do, I'll jot it down. And, you know, I look for guys, you know, we love to talk basketball all the time, you know, nonstop. And people are always asking me around town in Meijer or Starbucks, hey, what'd you think of Michigan State's game last night? And I like to be, you know, I like to be in the know. I don't want to talk about something that I didn't see last night, you know, or you know, 2 weeks ago. And I look for guys who play hard. You know, Tom's been recruiting kids who play hard. And Earl, when it gets back to recruiting, we talked about it a little while ago. I always say, when you recruit a kid, you can see how many points he scores, how many assists he has, how many rebounds he gets, how high he can jump. But the one thing you can't do is you can't measure a kid's heart. Okay, you can't do an autopsy on a kid. When he gets to your campus in August or September, you don't know if you're going to get that same kid you saw the year before. So when I go to games, I try to match up and compare the notes from when he was in high school. Like they talk about so-and-so. He was this, he was that. Well, let's see. Is he doing it now? Because recruiting is not an exact science. We've seen a lot of kids come through these doors here at East Lansing, you know, Michigan State, who come in with all these accolades, and they wind up being busts.
Now, I guess I'm gonna ask you both a tough question. What do you think about us, the media's role? What do you think the media's role in all of this, in covering basketball and following basketball? What do you, I know, Steve, I've heard you on different talk shows and such. What do you think is the role of the media, and what should the media be doing in their coverage?
I'll be honest. It's good and bad, okay? Let me start with the bad. I don't like when there's newspaper articles or magazine articles written about 6th and 7th graders, okay, and 8th graders. I think that's doing a kid an injustice. It's hyping them up. It's selling them a dream, okay, because we have no idea. Why not go out and do the story? If you got to do a basketball story, do the story on a sophomore or junior at that high school. You know, why do you got to put a 7th grade, you know, in a magazine or in a newspaper? Like, I'll tell you one thing right now. I'm not saying the media was the reason Marcus Taylor didn't have an NBA career. Marcus Taylor had a great career here at Michigan State. I mean, he led the Big Ten one season in scoring and assist, if I'm mistaken. But I think the media needs to, and I know it's all about media today. It's 24/7. It's the internet now. Everybody has a blog. The recruiting services, I consider those guys media. I think they do the game an injustice, okay? Because they hype up these kids, and you go to a game, and you're like, wait a minute, that kid was ranked third in the state. He's not that good. The good side of it is they're there at the games. They're covering the games. Earl, you're at all the games, you know, News 10, News 6. You guys are out giving some coverage. We go home at night. We like to watch the highlights, you know, the fifth quarter they have when you have guests on. I think that's the good side of it. Exposure is good, but it comes with that fine line now. Is it too much? Is it too little? Is it just the right amount?
Yeah, I think the media, you hit it right on the head. The media is there for exposure. It's there to expose everybody, you know. I think the media does their job, but it's not all on the media. It's how the coaches handle the media, how they teach their kids how to deal with the media. It's on the families on how to teach their kids on how to deal with the media, those kind of things. I think media does a good job of exposure, but, you know, in 2011, how many forms of media do you have?
Oh,
you know,
forget
you got cell phone, you got text messaging, you have
forget
computer,
it.
You got Facebook, you got, there's so many different ways. I mean, you can go on a website right now, you can hit Google and find out anything you want to find out right now. So,
you know, as long as they do their homework, you know, Earl, you're at everything. I see you there. Mm-hmm. So when I hear you talk on the air, if I'm driving and you're talking about Sexton right. or Easton or Okemos or East Lansing, I put value into what you're saying because mm-hmm. you were there. You talk to us. You talk to Michigan State players, the coaches. When I see certain media individuals who do not go out and watch these games, football, basketball, whatever it is, and then they come on the air and they start talking about it or start writing about it, whatever it is, it kind of, you know, mm-hmm. I kind of say, hey, I'm not putting any stock into that.
Okay. Well, how do you both take when you get that criticism? How do you handle the criticism?
You know, it comes with the territory for me. You know, they're going to – I've been on both sides of you know, they praise you when you do well, and when you do something they don't like, they beat you up. I mean, it comes – it's just like a quarterback. You know, the quarterback has their hand on every snap. They get the praise when they do well, and when they don't do well, they get criticism. It comes along with the territory. And, like, for me, for a varsity head coach, you know, if I can't handle it, then I shouldn't be doing the job. I shouldn't be doing a job if you can't take someone critiquing you, because really the true critique comes from yourself. When mm-hmm. you look yourself in the mirror at night, you know, hey, did I do my film study? Mm-hmm. You know, did I have practice? You know, did I do my scouting report? You know, did I prepare my kids the right way to get it done? So you can critique me all you want, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, if I haven't done my homework, then I need to get critiqued. You know what I mean? I need to get beat up. I need to get blasted. But I know that I'm going to prepare. I know that I'm going to prepare. I'm going to spend time in the film room getting my guys prepared. You know, it's part of the territory.
I think you got to have thick skin. You know, you can't be a guy who worries about what other people say. You know, it's your team. Mm-hmm. They're your players. You got to believe in your philosophy, okay? If you're going to run this type of offense, you got to live and die with it. If you hear people, you know, talking over your shoulder, you know, mm-hmm. Carlton was talking about the parent, talking about shoot. Those people aren't with you every day in practice with your players. They don't know what you can do. Earl, I read a great quote one day, a long time ago. I don't know how I remembered it, but a coach said, the people who criticize the most are the least knowledgeable. And it stuck with me for a long time. And if you go on these internet, you know, message boards, most of those people who criticize coaches, it pains me. I cringe when you ride around, you hear people criticizing Tom Izzo. You know, and I'm just like, how can you do something like that? This man's changed this program around in 16 years. So, hey, you know what? We're open for criticism. You got a right to do it, but I think you got to learn a lot more about our team before you start criticizing.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit more before we wrap this program up about both your teams. Now, both of you lost players from last year. When you fill in the players and you've had players coming back, as both you said, you have a lot of players coming back, how do you look to fill those positions, or do you look to fill them in a certain way, or does that change the dynamic of your team? Maybe you have a three-guard offense, you know, with two big guys, or maybe you have a three big men up front and just two guards. How does that change the dynamic of your team when you lose players going into the next year?
Yeah, I lost a pretty good player in Tyron Wade, who was my leading scorer the last 2 years. 6'5", 265, 260 pounds, who was very, very good outside shooter. So there's no way I can recover from that. So I have to readjust and look at my personnel. And I can't say, well, I'm just going to run my system. I have to see what my kids can do. And then I design the system around what my kids can do. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not it's not the pros, or it's not college where I can go and recruit kids to fit a certain system. I have to take my personnel and what I have, and then roll from there. To me, it's all about the early part and making sure that they gel, making sure that they understand what's going on. I'm in a unique situation because I've got guys that have been playing varsity basketball for 3 years. So when you ask me this question next year, it's going to be a lot different. You know, when I go in, I can basically, like today, you know, my guys know what to expect. But, you know, it's going to be tougher next year for me.
Okay. We work on the confidence. You know, I got no problem with telling my kids how good they are, how hard they're working. It's important. You know, you got to make kids feel good. I try to lift all my players up. There'll always be one or two players who feel left out, who feel slighted, no playing time. But we got to come out every single practice, every single game, play as hard as we can, and not worry about, you know, the other team. We'll give them respect. You know, they got their college scholarships, they're top-ranked players. We're fine with all that. But we got to know at East Lansing, we're going to come out, we got to compete every night, and we won't be in awe of anyone. And that probably says it.
Now, what about, we've talked about the parents. What are the good things? Because we really haven't focused on the good things the parents do. What are some of the better things the parents do?
Well, you know, I know, and my parents have been very supportive in taking care of their kids. You know, you know, no one coach, no one player, no one individual can help a player get to where he's going to go. So our parents have been just tremendous in the way that they've taken care of their kids and making sure that they have a place to live, a place to sleep, a place to eat, a safe place where they can go home and do their homework. This may seem like it's way out of the way, but those things are very important. The parents also, you know, they help out with just a lot of different areas, you know.
Concessions. You got good concessions at Sexton.
Dude, they got good concessions. You know, we have a the popcorn's pretty good.
The cookies.
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah. Those cookies. When you walk in, you can smell those cookies.
I'm going over at halftime to get me one.
Yeah, you know, so parents have the parents have a role. I think if you can find a role for them, it can be a pretty good situation for you.
I love my parents at East Lansing. I really do. I mean, I got some really good parents there. I'll reveal something here that only my wife knows. I didn't have one problem last year with a parent from East Lansing. I didn't have one single problem, not one phone call, not one email. I had a parent come up to me after the season and said, "Coach, you did a great job. My son didn't play as much as he would have liked, but you know what? You were fair to everyone." So the parents are great, man. They run the concessions. They run the parties, you know, the food, the pregame meal. They're at all the games. They're cheering. You know, when we go on the road, you know, you don't get many fans. The parents are always there. They see their kids off. They pick their kids up. It all boils down to relationships. If you're honest and upfront with people, it should work out.
Well, as you know, since I'm at a lot of games, and it would be nice if you guys could help me win the raffle one of these times. I look at that donation every year. I've been donating and haven't won a raffle in maybe 10 to 15 years.
Well, I know East Lansing's got a big 50-50 raffle, man. I need to get over there and win some of that.
I'm not eligible to play, man. But I see it all the games. Right? We talked about media before, and I just want to applaud you for the work you do for the kids. And it's great. Like we talk about, it's good and bad, the media, but you're definitely on the good side.
Absolutely, Earl. You've done a great job, and I think you've been very, very fair with all of our kids, so we like to thank you for that too.
Well, thank you, guys, and I want to thank you both for being with us today and talking on this Thanksgiving Day program, and we want to thank you all for listening, and come back and join us tomorrow. We'll have another special Thanksgiving Day program, and that's Steve Fenimore from East Lansing High, Carlton Valentine from Lansing Sexton High School, so we want to thank them both for coming in and helping us out on this Thanksgiving Day program, and we'll invite you back and come back and join us tomorrow and come back and stay with us a little bit longer, but before I finally close it up, and finally, just let you get one final question in. Both of you, you know, you both have good programs, have great years, and Steve, your first year was a very good year, and Carlton, you've been around a few years and have had very good years. What is the thing that's most challenging for both of you in coaching basketball?
Well, I'll tell you right now, I'll make the proclamation. I want to be the first conference ever in the history of Michigan basketball to have two state champions. How about that? That's one thing we're shooting for. We're shooting. If we come in second place in the blue, we're still shooting for a state championship. So we can have two from the same conference.
That's right. Absolutely. I love that, too. It'd be great for our area. And I'll tell you one thing. Basketball is not down in mid-Michigan. Basketball is alive and well. You know, we got great coaches. We got great players and a great conference. Let's have great fans this year and have a great year.
Okay, we want to thank you both for being here, and thank you, and you can come back and join us tomorrow on Sports Talk 870, AM 870, WKAR. I want to thank Carlton Valentine and Steve Fenimore with us for being with us, and thank you both, gentlemen, and we'll see you during the season. It's a long basketball season.
Sure is.
So I know I'll see you both all during the season.
Thank you, Earl.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
We want to thank you for listening to our Thanksgiving Day program. You're listening to AM 870, WKAR, East Lansing. From NPR.